So sad.
Hey there, guys. Thanks for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. We are currently broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory in Vancouver, BC, on the UBC campus. This is Word on the Street, brought to you by the UBC Music Affairs Collective. And I am joined by quite a large cast of individuals today. I think there's 9 of us in the booth. And happy first day of spring, guys. Yeah. And now that we're done with winter, we got festivals coming up. This summer is going to be wild. Who wants to list off all the festivals coming up?
Well, there's a lot of like new ones coming to Vancouver. So there's Skookum, I believe, and Breakthroughs new. And I don't know, just a lot. There's like a lot of cool ones happening in Seattle as well, like the Capitol Hill Block Party and the other one that we're all super
Sasquatch.
Excited. Sasquatch, like... I don't know. There's We Are Electric in the Netherlands, which I am somehow going to. A lot of good stuff.
Sweet. Do you guys have some information on the local ones? Like what kind of music's coming out of them? Like,
I'm going to say my mini beef with Skookum. This is a small beef. It's like Skookum's like kind of funny because it's a lot of like music that a lot of us probably listened to while we were growing up. So like The Killers are going to be there, Florence and the Machine, Metric's going to be there. They're only selling weekend passes though, and they're $300. Yeah. So that's what? My beef because I just want to see The Killers.
Fair enough. So we were talking about the Fire Festival just now. Can we get some background on what that is?
Is an amazing story.
Okay. Would you like to tell it, Zubin?
True saga. I don't know if I have the full timeline down pat, the essential gist of it is that like Ja Rule, who some of you may know if you grew up in the 90s, I did not, I was born in 98, but Ja Rule was a rapper. I don't know if he's still a rapper. Anyways, he co-founds this festival with Billy McFarland, who has, I believe, now been criminally charged for fraud. Who is also the founder of Fire Media, and this festival was supposed to basically promote the brand and like this app they were starting. The whole idea was like it's a super exclusive luxury event in like an island near the Bahamas, or one of the Bahaman islands. I don't really know that geography well. Anyways, so once these people who had paid $1,500 to $12,000 a ticket showed up, they found out that they were basically in like white camping tents. The celebrity chef backed out, so they were eating like it was white bread with like pieces of cheese and like terrible like hospital salad. Like, so yeah, essentially it seems like a pretty big scam. And then of course to top it all off, afterwards there's a lot of Twitter like roasting going on about it. It became a big meme for a bit. Ja Rule responded with a couple big tweets claiming that it's not a scam and also, quote, this is not my fault.
Can't blame Ja Rule. All right, so next time you know, $12,000 ticket for a festival, you know,
I also want to say rest in peace to Pemberton and Squamish. I just want to read out this old Pemberton lineup because it makes me sad that I was too young at the time to go. And I remember I mentioned this a while ago, but Nine Inch Nails, Outkast, Deadmau5, Soundgarden, Frank Ocean. By the way, Frank opened for Outkast. Kendrick Lamar, Metric, Snoop Dogg, Lauryn Hill, Blondie, Cage the Elephant, just Tyler, School of Q, St. Vincent,
Earl Sweatshirt,
just Flying Lotus, just so many.
What's the story behind? I know Pemberton like kind of went bankrupt. Like they sold tickets. They're selling tickets, and then like just before.
Yeah,
people got.
Though, I, think. I know Squamish was more problematic. Some people didn't get their money back.
Yeah.
I think, I'm not sure, I'm mixing them up maybe. One of them went bankrupt and one of them, it was just literally such a big mess after the festival, right? Mm. That they couldn't run it anymore, which is horrible.
Yeah, I remember some stuff about Pemberton, like they got like new ownership or something, and then they had issues where like all the cars driving in, there was so much dust getting kicked up that they were having trouble running like the event because it was just like a dust storm from all the cars.
I know it was actually Squamish where their contract was supposed to go until 2021, and then it just like abruptly stopped. They're just like, yeah, I don't know, there's a lot of competition, we're just like not gonna continue it. All the local businesses were just like, excuse me, like we were relying so much on that. I have some personal beef with Squamish too. That was the first year, Squamish 2016 and 2015 was the first year I was like, I'm gonna go to a music festival, I'm a grown up now, let's do it, like I'm gonna book an Airbnb. And we were about to book the Airbnbs, we were gonna get everything ready, and then I was like, okay, so this is not happening, the music festival does not exist anymore.
What was that Squamish? Squamish had a contract for all of these local businesses that like we're gonna keep running until 2021, or like Squamish.
Like Squamish was supposed to run until 2021. Like the festival was supposed to go until then. And I remember like the year before in 2015, I think it was like SZA played. Who else? Wait, I wrote them down because I was so excited.
So heated.
Alabama Shakes, Joel Plaskett, Sam Smith was there, Drake, Mumford and Sons, and like this is 2015. This is when everyone jammed out to Mumford and Sons. Back in the day.
Speaking of festivals that aren't festivals anymore, Warped Tour is ending. This summer is going to be its last.
Oh, man.
Just wanted to bring that up because, you know, like when you talk about festivals, it's had such a lasting influence. Like bands like Blink 182, Sublime, you know, like they made their names out on that tour. So that ending's probably going to have pretty serious consequences for that whole scene of music.
Yeah. I don't really know much about the Warped Tour. I've pretty much just seen the Warped Tour from memes that are like, like 2001 Skater
Kids. We're talking about this. This is so funny. A lot of people were kind of beefing the Warped Tour. Everybody's beefing tours. And they're beefing bands Warped Tour, like their Twitter, because they're saying like, I can't believe you guys can't get like these really cool artists and stuff like that. And the band's Warped Tour is tweeting back saying like, we're trying to do this. And then they're having a meltdown and like tweeting back at all these angsty teens. I'm pretty sure it's an angsty teen running the account.
Like, Warped Tour honestly like defined a generation of like kids that just wore like multicolored shorts and like your Converse with really high socks that you got from Claire's and like really big band t-shirts.
I went one year, okay?
Wait, you went to Warped Tour?
I went to Warped Tour.
What year?
10th grade, so 2014, 15, I don't know, one of those 2 years. And it was interesting. It was very hot. There was a lot of people and, I don't know, fishnets and neon pizza, you know those like neon shirts with like cats on them, like you know the edgy kids, like those kids. Yeah, it was fun. Like I know it's like kind of cringy, but like also it was a good day.
And so, as somebody who doesn't, I hadn't heard of Warped Tour until I googled it right now. Like,
oh, really?
What is it?
Okay,
what makes it so different from
Warped
all the other
Tour
music festivals?
Warped Tour started by Kevin Lineman is a festival. It's like a traveling festival, so it would happen like one day in a city, and it goes all around North America. They started like a Warped Tour Europe as well, I think, but like the main ones in North America. And they have like, when they started, they had people like Blink-182, Eminem was on Warped Tour 1 year, I think, like Linkin Park, like those kind of bands, like, I don't know, like Sum 41 and stuff like that. And yeah, it was just a really big festival, and there's all these like big names that were on it back in the Black Eyed Peas, I think, were on Warped Tour. Katy Perry was on Warped Tour at some point. And then as time progressed, it became like more heavier and heavier, but then like at some point they had like random EDM people and like random rappers. I don't know, it's just like a interesting lineup, and you could see it dwindling. Like they stopped having dates in Canada, and then they like had less dates in the States, and then they're like, we're ending, and this is the last year of Warped Tour.
This year is the last year, and are they just doing States locations this year?
Yeah, same as last year, they didn't come to Canada, and everyone was, there's like shuttle buses, they'd run shuttle buses from like Toronto down to Buffalo.
Oh wow.
For people, but yeah, no.
Remember when I talked to Nardwar and I asked him, did you ever get the chance to interview Eminem? He said he was going to at the Warped Tour, but he messed up. He said it much more passionately than that, and he was actually upset. He was like, yeah, I missed my chance. So, just a fact there.
So like it sounds like the Warped Tour kind of had already died, you know, prior to this official announcement that it's ending. You could see like the scene changing, the people, like the artists being invited out, the people going out to shows. And
Can I just read some of these tweets? So they're very, the Vans Warped official Twitter was very angry. So someone was like, this is the most unprofessional thing I've ever seen on this website. Like as a result to their, I don't know, anger. And Vans Warped were replied with, how? We've had to watch for years of fans saying we suck and we can't book a lineup. We're idiots. We stayed silent and let people trash us, but squashing rumors about bands no longer playing the tour is unprofessional. Like, they're just so angry. And, like, they went on. There's, like, threads and threads of them just, replying to 14-year-olds on Twitter. And it may be a sign of why this festival ended. This is their, like, media representative. The official. Blutik, like...
Honestly, it sounds like such like a Tumblr argument that you've seen. You're just like, these are 13-year-olds arguing. Like, this is awful.
It was great. I was enjoying it a lot.
Yeah. A lot of skate brands are kind of known for doing that kind of thing. Like Thrasher, Palace, they'll like call people out in the comments and just like openly roast them. But picking fights with 14-year-olds, not the most mature thing to do. Yeah, it's a slippery slope. What do you guys think of as kind of festivals and concerts and artists get bigger and the scene, as they get more popular, the scene of who's going to the shows kind of changes? The first one that comes to mind is kind of Burning Man, which used to be like this congregation of hippies. And now it's kind of businessmen who just want to do drugs in the middle of the desert. And it's like expensive to go to Burning Man. Whereas it used to be kind of like, you know, communal, like, I don't know, communism in the desert. Like, everyone just brings their thing.
Tickets are like $1,200 or something. And then you have to prep. It's like an actual, like, because you can't, they don't have anything. They have, like, first aid, but they don't have water. Like, you have to bring everything yourself. And, yeah, that's, like, not a carefree, easy thing to go to. Honestly, you have to, like, do some financial planning. I feel like it's lost the spirit of what Burning Man should be.
Quick tangent. Did anyone ever remember that episode of Malcolm in the Middle where they went to Burning Man?
Yes.
That's after that, I was so obsessed. I was like, what is a music festival? Yeah. When I watched that episode, I was just like, I need to go. Once in my life, I was so obsessed with Burning Man.
That was the episode where Hal was in the RV, like, yelling, and everyone thought it was performance art.
Wow, I love performance art. Everyone starts crowding around.
Shouts out to Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, like, your question, I think different festivals have, like, very different identities. Like Coachella, like, it's a music festival, but like, is it a music festival? I feel like it's more of like an opportunity for celebrities to like get photos taken of them and like have their outfits talked about. Like, I feel like certain festivals have just become kind of like a cultural like show. I don't know, just like more about who went and like what they wore rather than like the bands that play.
Coachella, it's kind of like a milestone. Like, if you get invited to perform Coachella, that's like, that's a stripe, that's a badge of honor that you can wear. Like, I played Coachella. As opposed to kind of maybe more for the music. I still would love to go to Coachella.
Yeah, same. I would go.
I think like some music festivals that just have a very diverse set of artists, because maybe they're smaller scale, actually really cool as well. I know Calgary has one. I think the name is changing, but it's called Circle the Wagon. And it was the most surreal experience because there were a whole bunch of like EDM and rave artists, but also Homeshake played and a bunch of like very small scale acoustic people. And it was just the weirdest mashup of people. Like, one sector of the field, you had a bunch of hippies like with their tapestries and people are doing like hula hoop performance art. And then the other side, there's like a rave tent. And then in the middle, there was a whole bunch of just like punk kids. It was very interdisciplinary, but I was so there for it.
Also tying into your question, Jonah, this is a lot of what like festivals have as an appeal to me too, is that I don't go to festivals like the big draw festivals for some people is like, oh, I want to see like the big artists, I want to see like the top bills. But I love when I go to festivals, and I've been to a couple, seeing like the bottom of the bill artists, and then they're like always really good because you go in with like no expectations a lot of the time. Like, I went to Longitude a couple years ago in Ireland, and Tyler was playing at one tent, and like, I think Churches were playing in another, like Run the Jewels was playing in another, and then I went to like the other tent and no one was there, and it was this like amazing band. And it was like, that was one of the coolest experiences. Like, you go to these festivals and everybody else is like distracted by the big artists, even at these like huge massive festivals, but it's still a chance for these smaller artists to get out there and really like make a name for themselves and show off what they have, which I think is like, even in the big festivals that have gotten really big, something that's still possible.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're just going to take a quick break right now, play some ads, play some PSAs. We'll be right back, guys.
Radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Skookum Festival is here, where urban meets wild in Vancouver's iconic Stanley Park, September 7th, 8th, and 9th. The Killers, Florence and the Machine, Metric, R. Kells, The War on Drugs, St. Vincent, Father John Misty, Blue Rodeo, Mother Mother, Chromeo, Bahamas, Stereophonics, and many more. Passes on sale now through SkookumFestival.com. Skookum Festival, produced by Brand Live, in collaboration with Virgin Mobile.
Translation? Discorder Magazine's March issue is coming in like a lion, but it's not going out like a lamb. The issue is hitting the streets at its over 100 distribution spots, made possible by our fearless advertisers, The Rickshaw, Mint Records, Timber Concerts, Blueprint Events, The Rio Theater, The Cinematheque Theater, Massey Books, and the Alma Mater Society. If you prowl around Van, you'll be able to read up on Man Up Vancouver, its wild success and 10-year anniversary celebration, an interview with Shindig's majestic winner Mama Rudgal, how the Poetry is Bad for You reading series captures your soul, a poem submission by cherished Cream AT writer Samantha Nock, and, of course, a full harvest of album, podcast, and book reviews and live show reviews of local bands. Translation, forever local, forever free, always salty.
Thank you.
Hey guys, welcome back. That was American Dreams by From Indian Lakes. And continuing on our show's theme today, which is, you know, music festivals, we're going to pose the question, which do you prefer going to? Concerts or big festivals? Anyone got some hot takes?
I think we were talking about this like kind of over the break. It depends on what you're looking for. So in my opinion, and you guys could like disagree with this if you want, but I think if I'm going to see a specific artist, like if I'm going to go see like, I don't know, if there's like the top bill and I'm like, let's say top bill is, who's top bill at like a big festival right now? If there's like
Brockhampton.
Okay, let's say top bill is Brockhampton and I really want to go see Brockhampton. I feel like I would rather go to a Brockhampton show to see that artist to get the full like Brockhampton experience. But I think that the place for festivals, and I like personally prefer festivals better because of this, is because you can go to a festival and then you get the full festival experience. So you see the artist you want to see, you see like the big songs, but you also see like the artist you'd never heard of before, like the artist maybe you hadn't had a chance to check out. And I think that's the whole like appeal for me there.
I don't know. Yeah, like the festival experience. I mean, I am someone who hasn't been to a festival. I mean, like the closest thing I've been to a music festival is like Contact 2015. And I hate EDM. I just went because all my friends went. And it was just not that great of an experience. But I feel like at the same time, festivals, even if you're going for those headliners, you know, you got, I want to see Brockhampton. I want to see Mac DeMarco. I want to see, I don't know, like Bob Dylan. And then they're not as good as you expected them to be. You can just walk away and go to another show and just be like, okay, this is different and this is better. You have options. Whereas in a concert, you're kind of locked to whoever's playing their set at a given time.
I think, yeah, I kind of agree with what Killian was saying. It's like it matters what you're going for. I feel like going to a festival when you actually don't have anyone in mind like would be pretty cool, because like you said, like you go to something, you don't like it, you leave, like there's all these options. But I know I went to like a day of Gov Ball, which is in New York City, and I went to see the Strokes. Yeah, it was so good. It was like the three headliners were, I think it was the Strokes on one day, then the Killers, and Kanye. And what? Kanye's day, wait, hold up, everyone, what? Relax. Kanye's day, there was lightning and it got canceled.
No.
And it was so sad because everyone was like so upset. But I went for the Strokes, so I got that, and I was... Jonah seems like he needs to say something.
Oh, no, it's cool, it's cool. But that's something. Concerts won't get canceled due to weather.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Festivals can't get rained out.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get rained out at the Orpheum.
Yeah.
maybe that's, you know...
Another con. But I went for the Strokes, so I saw some bands earlier on the day, but then, like, for most of the day, I was just, like, standing in the area where they're going to be playing, so I'd be close up. And that was, like, still, like, the best night ever, because I just love the Strokes. But I feel like if there was just a Strokes concert, like, I probably would have... They had a concert, actually. They played, like, a small venue, like, 2 days before, like a secret show, but I wasn't there for that.
Well, that actually, that points out kind of to me something that could be, like, a drawback of festivals, is that, like, even if there's like this band you really want to see and you're going to see them at the festival and you get real close to the stage, you have to wait for like 2 hours if it's a big enough festival.
Two sets I watched before were like Beck and like Monsters and Men, so it was like enjoyable.
Oh yeah, like that's
but,
fine.
But like I was just standing there, like I didn't leave.
Yeah. You have to commit to the spot. And so
there's like the whole front row of that concert, it was all people from Toronto that I saw like all the shows I went to. They literally like as soon as doors open at 11 a.m. they like sprint to the front of the barricade and just there all day. I don't know how. I don't have that dedication, but like, I don't know. People do that.
Yeah, I think festivals are typically more prone to kind of rowdy instances as well. My friend went to, I think it was Pemberton 2 years ago, and got into a fight and then got robbed. So you know, it's kind of sketchy. I mean, the robbed thing was his fault. He and a girl went off in a. Were holding hands, presumably, and then her friend slipped into his tent.
Wow.
But, I mean, that kind of stuff is definitely
so
not going to happen as much at concerts. It's a bit safer, whereas festivals, yeah. So
I feel like festivals, people are there for, like, hours and hours, and so much stuff is happening. People are tired, stakes are high, tensions are high. And so, like, people get a little rowdy. People get sensitive. Whereas concerts, you have, like, one idea in mind. You're like, okay, these are my expectations. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to go for a few hours. It'll be fun. Whereas, festivals, you're out in the wild. Like, you revert back to natural instincts.
It's a commitment, yeah.
It definitely is a commitment.
I think it also depends on the size of the artist. When we were talking about before, stadium versus a bar or something like that, or Rogers Arena versus the Vogue. If it's a bunch of artists that are the scale of Rogers Arena and, you know, I can't get super close at a festival, then I don't know if I'd rather just go close at Rogers Arena. But what if there is a festival, you know, with like a bunch of smaller artists, and then presumably it wouldn't be a huge crowd and you could get super close? I think regardless of if it's a festival or a concert, I want to be right up front. And I've only been to 2 concerts, I think, even at Rogers, where I haven't been right there. And that's super important to me. So I think, but I haven't been to a festival, so also I can't really have a great opinion, but that's just what I think.
I think that something else to add on to that is something that's I think is underrated when it comes to festivals is like not being super close, because one thing that's really, really nice about festivals is like sometimes you can just like sit on a hill or like put out a picnic blanket and like listen to artists. Like it's like not like your time isn't solely spent just like being there to listen to the artist, because that's the only thing that you pay to do, whereas like at a concert you want to spend the whole like 2 hours being in front of the person because you spent the money to do that, you know. Festival, I think, is more like experience based too.
Yeah, and like talking about the experience, the whole fact that at some festivals you get to camp out and just like kind of live there for a couple of days, I feel like that adds a whole dimension to it. And I haven't done that yet. I'm doing that this summer and I'm super excited. But yeah, I feel like you, like everyone's just together and like gross and it's just bonding and you make all these friends. I feel like that's how it'd be. I don't know yet, but I can update you next year.
Yeah, I feel like festivals are definitely more of like a social world. Like you go to hang out with your friends and it's not really actively listening to the music as Alexis said. Yeah, like you can just kind of sit away and hear in the background. You're not like in the mosh pit. Well, you don't have to be like up front.
A lot of videos that I've seen from festivals, and I guess from concerts as well, but is of especially hip-hop artists. Their sets don't really seem all that great a lot of the time, especially I think Kendrick is a big person who does this, but just kind of rapping over the backing track, like they're playing their song and then rapping over it and then kind of trying to get the crowd hype, and that whole having your song playing and then just like doubling up the vocals live. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about that. Most hip-hop shows that I've been to kind of suck because of that. I went to see Vince Staples and it was just like, well, he's pretty much just playing his own songs loud and then dancing on stage while shouting ad-libs.
Yeah, I actually, I saw Kendrick in at the festival I went to, London Street, and it was kind of the same thing. He did a lot of call and response where, like, the song's playing in the background the whole time, and it's almost kind of louder than he is. Mm-hmm. And, like, he'll just, because everybody knows the lyrics, right? He'll throw a line, and then you throw a line back, and, like, it's interesting, but it's not really, like, and I really liked the experience because the whole crowd was super into it, but I think that's not, like, what some people would go to see him for.
Mm-hmm. When I saw Kendrick in Montreal, I had nosebleed seats because I bought them the day of for like $50. It was dope. But it was not that great of a show because we were just super far away, super high up. And I guess if you're on the floor, it's fun because you're mosh and you're with people who are high energy. Me and my friend were just standing at our chairs watching, you know, 2 kung fu fighters on stage kind of doing the kung fu Kenny thing. And it, like, we walked away from it and it was like, that was an okay show. It wasn't that great. And being a huge Kendrick stan for like ever since he dropped Section 80, it was kind of disappointing my first time seeing him live.
Which is you go.
Oh, okay, thanks. I saw him in Vancouver for the same tour, but I was on the floor, and it was great. I was pretty far back considering I was on the floor, but I snuck up. Also because Travis was there too, but the security is pretty bad, so I couldn't stay up front the whole time. And at one point when he did Money Trees, there was this very small stage, and it went dark in the whole arena. And then when Money Trees came on, he was like, right beside me, pretty much like, less than 10 feet away. And then the stage went up, and it was just, my friend was crying. he started crying when Kendrick initially came out, and it was just like so much. And we were just amazed. I don't even think we were singing along because we were just in awe.
Just so shocked.
Because he's right there.
Yeah.
And because we've been listening to him for all of high school, and then we were finally seeing him. So I think it was great, but I could definitely understand that because I went to J. Cole earlier in the summer, and then I was lower bowl, but when I go to a concert, I want to get up and I want to sing and I want to dance. I don't want to just sit there unless it's that type of show. But with J. Cole, I was trying to stand up and all the people around me are like, what are you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? What are you doing? Like, come on, just get up, sing, and dance.
It just wasn't happening.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you feel like had it been live instrumentation rather than just playing the tracks, would it have been a better experience? Or because artists like Anderson .Paak and locally...
He was at J. Cole.
Oh.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
He was playing the drums and rapping at the same time, and it was crazy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And did you feel like the energy in the arena was higher during that? Or, well, I guess J. Cole is more well-known, so people will know the songs more. But, like, from a spectator who knows both of them, who did you enjoy more?
I wasn't a huge Anderson .Paak fan at the time. But still, I was really impressed because he was rapping and playing the drums simultaneously. And because I didn't really know who he was, he definitely got my attention.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the visuals are really important. And I mean, just to compare to something else, I went to Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. And even though, you know, he's a pretty old dude now, he wasn't jumping around or anything. But the visuals and then... the whole setup of all the instruments and everything was crazy because there's so many people involved with the sound. So that was definitely really interesting, even though it wasn't necessarily from a choreography type of standpoint, I guess, because I think if you're like Anderson and you're doing an instrument and you're rapping, then it's more interesting in terms of the choreography. Compared to J. Cole, who was just running around the stage, this little square, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess like what you just said, obviously when J. Cole came out, there's more energy because a lot of people didn't know who Anderson .Paak was.
Interesting. Anyone else?
I think this is kind of off topic, but it kind of relates to something I was thinking about while you were going through that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, at least in my opinion, bands that have or use live instrumentation are like way more engaging to see live,
yeah,
I think.
For sure.
And like, I think that's what makes a lot of hip hop artists like maybe Kanye or Kendrick or J. Cole a little, it feels kind of disconnected when you see them in concerts. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but that's just something I was thinking of.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. One of like my favorite like clips of Kendrick live is Kendrick at SNL, where he does Swimming Pools and Poetic Justice with a live band. And he's got like a saxophone player and stuff like that. And he just puts a whole new spin on the track, and that's way better than having him just like rap over a track playing really loud in the background.
I feel like when it comes to just like appreciating music that's more electronic based and versus like music with instruments, it's just easier, I feel, for people to like see the work that goes into playing an instrument. Like you can see the guy's fingers moving like across the fretboard, you can like see the guy drumming. But when it comes to electronic stuff, like I know personally, I don't really have a great understanding of how that stuff works. So I can't be like, whoa, like, I can't believe he made that beat. Like, I don't know how it works. So, like, I feel like it's just one of those things that once you understand, like, how it works, you actually appreciate it more. So, like, I feel that's why it's, like, harder for people to appreciate that kind of electronic stuff and, like, write it off as just, like, pressing some buttons. But, like, it's way more than that.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. It's a good point. On another note, what do you guys think about like seeing performers who have like very intense choreography where their show is more like an event, like a spectacle, versus like someone, an artist who's like still really good and respected but just a little more hyped up and does like more like ad-lib type of stuff?
What do you mean by choreograph? Like
okay.
Backup dancers and
like, I think like Beyonce live.
Okay.
I think just, and this is probably comes down to personal preference, but I think when I go to a concert, it's like visual engagement is super important. Like, you can listen to the music at home or like in great headphones and get not the exact same experience, but a similar experience to maybe sonically what you're hearing before you go to the concert. But when you actually go to the concert, you go to see the person, you go to hear like the whole sound in the whole arena, like everybody cheering and them having like a visually engaging part of their whole presentation, I think just adds so much to that. It makes it so much like more interesting as a viewer as opposed to just as a listener.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was at the Japanese Breakfast concert a little while ago. And yeah, Alexis.
That's the first time me and Jonah met.
Yeah,
I was crying.
You were crying. But the first performer, was kind of, it was a solo act, this girl on stage playing guitar and singing, and visually it was just a purple light on her and her singing sad songs. And I guess it was kind of the mood, but like the you know, Japanese Breakfast, J-Som, they're more energetic pop music, and so people go expecting that. And maybe it would have been more interesting if there was some visual aspect to it, like disco balls flying around or something, but it was literally just person standing there playing guitar and singing. Whereas Jay Brecky, there were flashing lights. There was y'all never heard that? No? Okay. That's fine. No, that's fine. Real fans. Where you at? Flashing lights and the choreography and just the energy was way higher, despite it being pretty much the same stage setup. It wasn't that much, not that much difference between her and the opening act, but it was just so much more engaging.
I was gonna use Japanese Breakfast actually as an example, where like being at that show and also not being very tall, and with her not being very tall, we're at the Biltmore, so it's like very like leveled. You're very, very level with the artist, so it was very, very hard for me to see it. So I was not very visually stimulated. I could pretty much just see the backs of people's heads, but for me, the experience was still really, really great, because I think that like listening to her music live was great. But there was definitely like if you took me to like a Beyonce show, for example, and like blindfolded me, I don't think I would have a very good time. Mm-hmm. So I think it really like depends on the artist as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is 5:40. We have to take another quick break, but we'll be right back, guys.
Either you've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money, the one you loved and deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue. Right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
He feels about it. Blues ain't nothing but a man, good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
Come and feel our positive energy at Falun Dafa Fellowship. Falun Dafa, also called Falun Gong, is an ancient spiritual discipline based on the principles of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. It's a self-cultivation practice that improves mental and physical wellness through meditation and simple exercises. It's been well documented to improve mind and body, relieve stress and anxiety, increase energy and vitality, and promote morality and spirituality. Why not give yourself a chance to learn free of charge? To learn more, please visit our website at falundafafellowship.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back. That was Fruitless by Bridal Party. And cover bands. Cover bands. Acoustic covers of Tupac Shakur. Ska. Yo, wait, hold on.
There's a hilarious scene in like the most recent Atlanta episode. You just sparked me where it's like Paperboy, who's the rapper character, like Donald Glover's character's cousin, like, yeah, Paperboy. Oh yeah, so there's literally like they're making fun of like white women with guitars doing covers of like rap songs and like trap songs particularly. So like there's some like weed dealer who he's at, who was like, oh yeah, my girlfriend's a real big fan. So like he gives her his number and then he sends her a YouTube video of her like playing his song, like Paperboy. Like, I got a lot of Paperboy. It's like the cheesiest white product. Ooh. White cheddar. Ooh. Just a block of white cheddar.
Okay.
But it's funny.
We apologize if that offends any white cheddar out there.
I'm not a racist.
Killian, you had some positive things to say about cover bands.
I think I want
to
hear your opinions first, because this was your idea, and I think you had strong opinions before.
Okay, no, I don't necessarily. I have opinions from both sides. Cover bands are typically, I feel, kind of lazy. You know, you don't write your own songs. You're taking songs that are already existing, melodies that are already existing, and then just rearranging them into your own thing. I don't necessarily see anything wrong with that. But most cover bands are taking the original and just doing a worse version of what already exists. If you're going to cover something, your goal should be to make that song better or make it unique and at least at the same level. If you're making it unique, but the musicianship is not as good, you are doing a disservice to that song and a disservice to yourself as a musician.
Mm-hmm. All right, confession. I used to be part of a Green Day cover band in high school, and I agree 100% every word of that was true. We were terrible. But yeah, I guess when you're first starting off as a band, though, I mean, like, the most natural thing to gravitate towards is, you know, covering other people's music to kind of figure out where you are as artists, what kind of music you want to, like, base your work off of. And then in that sense, that's fine as long as you use that as a stepping stone towards, like, making your own music and developing your own sound. But I think a lot of bands essentially start off as cover bands.
What role in the Green Day cover band were you?
I used to sing. Not well.
Yeah. I gotta agree with Ethan, I think. I mean, like, personally, I think there's a place for cover bands. I know that my brother is just kind of getting into, like, making music, and he's starting with, like, Beach House covers. And it's more just, like, to teach himself how to set up everything. And, like, I think there's totally... Like, even with Ethan's band, too, you weren't making it because you were trying to ride on the coattails of the success of Green Day. You're doing it because you loved Green Day and you wanted to sing some Green Day jams. So, like, I think it's just, it's like homage. It's just showing your respect for the band. I think the people, I do agree that, like, the people who try and take it and they're like, oh, we'll just do it again and we'll make some money off it, I can't agree with that. But I think the people who either put their own, like, artistic flair on it or they're doing it because they just straight love the band, that I can get behind.
I think that doing covers is okay, but I don't think it's good if you're exclusively a cover band. I think it's cool, like Lexus was saying, if you're opening for the bigger band and then you cover a song from that band, like, that's good, but you shouldn't just perform the bigger band songs. Can you imagine going to a concert and then they literally just do the whole set? It's like a worse version first, and then it's the bigger band right after.
Yeah, I guess there's two schools of thought here. Bands that want to make it as their own artists and bands that want to make it as a cover band. Doing smaller shows, like you can do your own shows, and I'd prefer if you would make your own music, or you can just do live music at a bar. And that's okay for cover bands because they're not trying to make it as their own entity.
Yeah, I'm like not very into like exclusively cover bands, but I think covers are cool, especially when they like adapt and change the kind of music it is. But there's like two classes of covers that like I can never get behind. One is the like acoustic cover of a rap song. I've never seen one that's like, wow, like this is better, this is amazing. It's always just like four chords and like, I don't know, like breathy singing. And also Ethan and I were talking about this last week, but there's a series called Punk Goes Pop, and it's just a series of like, it started off with like pop punk bands covering like number one hits, and then it turned into like metalcore and like screamier bands covering pop hits, and it's like
blame it on the alcohol, but like with like riffs and screamy vocals, and it's just the worst, like the worst thing ever. And I don't know, that I cannot support. I'm trying to open my mind, but I can't. It's bad.
it's just bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a retaliation to the whole like acoustic trap cover when a bunch of people on Twitter would make like trap covers of like Vanessa Carlton, 1,000 miles. Like, it's really funny. Like, it was so good. Just a bunch of random people on Twitter.
All right, but what? Okay, if the artist is doing it seriously, like trying to do a Dear Mama cover seriously, that's you'd think, okay, that's cringy. But if they're doing it ironically, they're self-aware of how stupid it is. There's this actually kind of good acoustic session by Dan Hennig, and it's of Lil Jon's Get Low. And it's like he's clearly not taking it seriously, and because he's not taking it seriously, it's so much more enjoyable.
I feel like that's different. But yeah. You know the person, they always have that hat. They always have those like floppy hats on. It's always this girl with like a floppy hat singing like Amigo song with an acoustic guitar. I don't know.
Okay, so we can kind of jump off this into another genre, which is hip hop, and paying homage, as Killian said, rapping over someone else's beat. Where do you think that stands with regard to covers? Is it more an homage? Is it more, you know, a stepping stone? What's our opinion here?
I mean, like, most beats are a lot of samples.
That's true.
So, like, it's already, like, a remixed cover. So then you're just doing a vocal cover of something that, like, instrumentally is already, like, a repackaged piece of art. So, I mean, like, but I would argue, though, that, like, most hip-hop beats are their own, like, independent thing. Mm-hmm. Like, when Kanye takes, like, a Nina Simone sample, like, by the end of it, the vocals don't sound the same. If you listen to, like, the Nina Simone track, and it's, like, a part of the beat, it's not the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with all of this stuff, like, the covers and also, like, using other people's beats, I think that it, like, to me, most of it's okay as long as you're not, like, making millions off of it, I guess. but I think that there's a big difference between being good at playing music and being good at making music. So I think that if, like, for example, using somebody's beats helps you learn how to make music as opposed to just play it, then I think that it's, like, it's fair game. It's educational.
I think, I guess, in my opinion, there's so much more room to kind of do your own thing when you're rapping over someone else's beat than whether you're covering something. Like, there's so much more room to just literally make your own, like, make it your own song. I think a good example would be, like, Lil Wayne, because isn't that how he started out, is he was always rapping over other people's beats, and he had, like, nobody making beats for him, and then eventually when he got bigger, he started to get the beats, but he really, I think, kind of figured out his sound on other people's tracks and then kind of jumped in off that.
I think with hip-hop, it's a lot different because a lot of hip-hop is built off of sampling. Mm-hmm. Literally, there's this one song that's been sampled over 800 times. This is Lottie Dottie by Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick. Some examples where it's been sampled: Hypnotized by Biggie, Party by Beyonce, We Can't Stop by Miley Cyrus, just I don't know how, Good Friday, Kanye. I know it was also sampled on Lottie Dottie by Snoop Dogg. So it's just, with hip-hop, I think it's totally different because they do sample it, but then they mix it up a lot, and it's not totally just I'm taking the instrumental and then going over it most of the time. It's changing it.
Yeah. I kind of want to take it. Oh, did you have a...
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Just a real quick point on what Isaac said. Like, if you look at the history of hip-hop, it started off in, like, basements in the Bronx where people would take jazz records and, you know, like, scratch it up, combine different beats. And I think, like, that's where sampling came from. So maybe, like, having it continue to this day is just carrying that tradition forward.
Shouts out to DJ Kool Herc. Okay, so I have one more before we run out of time. Led Zeppelin, if you guys didn't know, most of their songs off of, you know, the Led Zeppelin 1, 2, 3, 4 are blues covers or rock covers of old blues songs. So much folk music is just taking melodies from older songs and recycling them. A lot of Bob Dylan's work is taking old spirituals and then putting new lyrics or just repeating them. Do you think those constitute as being covers, or much like the New York Symphony Orchestra, I think that's the thing, playing Mozart, is that kind of a new entity unto itself, or just replaying it? It's a loaded question, and I know I'm just kind of throwing it at you guys.
I mean, I guess like an orchestra playing something probably counts as a cover, but I don't think people in like the classical community like probably don't think they don't think of it's a cover orchestra. Like, they don't compose any of their own like.
Like, I guess arrangement would be better.
Beethoven's knocking me on Twitter like, yo, what are you doing?
Yo,
where's my credit?
Delete
Put
this
some respect on my name. But, yeah, I don't know. Well, I was thinking also, like, the Beatles, like, started as a cover band, you know, and then they became like, the biggest thing. Well, I'm pretty sure, the Skiffle, yeah, exactly. Like their time in, like, Hamburg, Germany was just, like, playing covers of older things. Well, you mentioned Bob Dylan, like, I was thinking, like, one of the best covers is, like, Jimi Hendrix's version of, like, All Along the Watchtower, which after his death, like, Bob Dylan played his version live instead. So, like, you know, there's, like, there's examples that I think, like, sure, a bunch of people will make a bunch of crappy stuff, but, like, there's a few good things to justify it.
Also, with folk music, historically, a lot of people don't know who wrote the original song, like, House of the Rising Sun. Mm-hmm. No one knows who wrote that. Yeah, it's just been around for, like, over 500 years now.
Really?
Yeah. The same melody, a bunch of the same lyrics. So the question then becomes, you know, is it a cover if this thing's already just kind of existed for ages?
It's like rewriting a story with like common works, you know, like whatever, what do they call it when the story's like common?
Fan fiction? No, folklore. Like, folklore.
Yeah, it's like property of like, it's like there's no more copyright on it, you know?
Yeah, kind of Tolkien, like fantasy. Is a good example.
Well, I mean, if you used one of like Red Riding's character or something that's old, like I don't think you.
Sorry, yo, say that in the mic. Drop that knowledge, I see ya. Who wrote Little Red Riding Hood?
Perrault. I don't know how to say it. It's very French, but I've read like 50 versions of it because of English 100.
Yeah. Let's go. All right, that's just about it for our show. Does anyone have any more opinions they want to throw down? Maybe stir up some controversy for the people at home? Say something super ignorant? Just get people riled up? No? Nothing?
Shout out to Locals Only. It happened last night.
Locals
Only. I see it. Do you want it quickly? 30 seconds.
It was cool. Very proud of you, Pernilla, Mia, Olivia. Cool that you like set up this whole thing. And someone threw a bra, a little bean. It was very interesting. Great night. Cool.
I'm so confused.
Richard and Connor.
All right. Shouts out to Richard and Connor. We will see you guys next week, Tuesday, 5 to 6. Next up is Flex Your Head, so stay tuned for some punk, metal, and hardcore. See you guys later.